So if you want to, you can turn to 2 Kings chapter 5.
2 Kings chapter 5.
And we ended our last class. We were talking about Naaman. And we saw in here that this is, you could say, a story of faith. It starts off talking about this young girl that was from Israel that was taken captive, and she ends up being Naaman's wife's servant. And then it shows how she expressed that she wished that her master, speaking of Naaman, would be able to be with the prophet in Samaria. And she said that because he could heal this leprosy. So we saw this in 2 Kings chapter 5. And it goes on to talk about how he went and spoke with the king, and the king's reaction. You know, he was like, you know, his response was, "Am I God?" You know, he has no ability to do anything on this, but Elisha is aware of what's going on. And he does have that ability, or God does. So in 2 Kings 5:8, let's read that. 2 Kings 5:8, it said, "It happened when Elisha, the man of God, heard that the king of Israel had torn his clothes, that he sent word to the king, saying, 'Why have you torn your clothes? Now let him come to me, and he shall know that there is a prophet in Israel.'" So Elisha is going to show that there's a prophet of God in Israel. He's going to prove that he's a prophet and show of this God that he serves. And as we mentioned in the last class, it's like we're seeing a lesson on faith. But we also notice that this is something that Naaman didn't have at first, not completely. He did go to Israel because of what he heard, this possibility of being healed. But when he got there, things didn't happen in the way that he thought they should happen. It wasn't some grand way to do this. First of all, Elisha didn't even come to him. He sends his servant to tell him what to do. And we spoke about agency. But after all of these things, and then even his own servants say, why can't you do this simple thing? If it was something, I'm paraphrasing, if he would have asked you to do this grand thing, you would have done that to be healed of this leprosy. Because without that faith of believing what was commanded and going and doing that, he could not be healed. But eventually he does. He goes and he dips 7 times as he was told, and then he's healed. So then we get into another section of this story. It's still talking about Naaman, but it talks about some other things that took place afterwards. In 2 Kings 5:15, let's start there. 2 Kings 5:15 says, "When he returned to the man of God with all the company and came and stood before him, he said, 'Behold now, I know that there is no God in all the earth but in Israel. So please take a present from your servant now.' But he said, 'As the Lord lives, before whom I stand, I will take nothing.' And he urged him to take it, but he refused. Naaman said, 'If not, please let your servant at least be given two mules load of earth, for For your servant will no longer offer burnt offerings, nor will he sacrifice to other gods, but to the Lord. In this matter, may the Lord pardon your servant. When my master goes into the house of Rimmon or to worship there, and he leans on my hand, and I bow myself in the house of Rimmon. When I bow myself in the house of Rimmon, the Lord pardon your servant in this matter. He said to him, go in peace. So he departed from him some distance. So we see here that Naaman offers Elisha a gift, or your version might say a present, or some versions say a blessing. So, but New King James, it'll say a gift. He wanted to thank Elisha by giving something in return. And as mentioned in our last class, you know, we weren't up to this point yet, but it was mentioned this idea that, you know, in the world, you see in religions that things are done for money, basically. And what you see here, what is being done, he's not asking of anything. He actually refuses this gift. So just keep that in mind, that Elisha refused this gift. So in verse 20, he starts talking about, we saw that he talks about Elijah's servant Gehazi. We'll see something going on in verse 20 concerning him. So Elisha, Naaman offers a gift, and Elisha refuses that. And then you have verse 20. But Gehazi, the servant of Elisha, the man of God, thought, behold, my master has spared this Naaman, the Aramean, by not receiving from his hands what he brought. As the Lord lives, I will run after him and take something from him. So Gehazi pursued Naaman. When Naaman saw one running after him, he came down from the chariot to meet him and said, is all well? He said, all is well. My master has sent me, saying, behold, just now two young men of the sons of the prophets have come to me from the hill country of Ephraim. Please give them a talent of silver and two changes of clothes. Naaman said, be pleased to take two talents. And he urged him and bound two talents of silver in two bags with two changes of clothes and gave them to two of his servants, and they carried them before him. When he came to the hill, he took them from their hand and deposited them in the house, and he sent the men away, and they departed. So we saw how Elisha refused this gift, but Gehazi had a different plan or a different idea about this. Was Elisha pleased with what he had done? Okay, no, he wasn't. He was not pleased with this. In verse 25 it says, but he went in and stood before his master. And Elisha said to him, where have you been, Gehazi? And he said, your servant went nowhere. So he was being dishonest about not leaving. And I'm not sure why he thinks that he can get away with this or lie to him about this. What ended up happening to his servant, Gehazi?
He's made a leper.
Okay, he's made a leper. He becomes a leper. He takes on, it says, Naaman's leprosy.
And all
And yes, ma'am. And this is something that he's going to pass down. So so he caused this for himself, and not only him, all of his descendants also would have this. In verse 26 it says, "Then he said to him, did not my heart go with you when the man turned from his chariot to meet you? Is it a time to receive money and to receive clothes and olive groves and vineyards and sheep and oxen and male and female servants? Therefore, the leprosy of Naaman shall cling to you and to your descendants forever." So he went out from his presence, a leper, white as snow. Any comments before we move on to or from this story on Naaman and his servant?
A servant of a prophet of God who sees the pure heart of Elijah. So it didn't make him a better man. He had a bad heart. And so he was a liar and grieved about God. And that's what brought it down for him.
Okay. And he was punished for that, wasn't he? His family. Anybody else? Okay. And so we'll jump over to chapter 6. It says, "Now the sons of the prophets," we'll get into another story. It says, "Now the sons of the prophets said to Elisha, 'Behold now, the place before you where we are living is too limited for us. Please let us go to the Jordan and each of us take from there a beam, and let us make a place there for ourselves where we may live.' So he said, 'Go.' Then one said, 'Please be willing to go with your servant.' And he answered, 'I shall go.' So he went with them, and when they came to the Jordan, they cut down trees. But as one was felling a beam, the axe head fell into the water. And he cried out and said, 'Alas, my master, for it was borrowed.'" So he's concerned about this axe head. "Then the man of God said, 'Where did it fall?' And when he showed it to him in the place, he cut off a stick and threw it in there and made the iron float. He said, 'Take it up for yourselves.' So he put it out his hand, or he put out his hand and took it." So just basically in this short section, we're going to see that this Elisha makes this axe float, or this axe head, if you will, the metal section float. And then it is recovered. And then it goes in to another story. In verse 8, it says, "Now the king of Aram was warring against Israel, and he counseled with his servant, saying, 'In such and such place shall be my camp.' The man of God sent word to the king of Israel, saying, 'Beware that you do not pass this place, for the Arameans are coming down there.' The king of Israel sent to the place about which the man of God had told him. Thus he warned them, so that he guarded himself there more than once or twice." So Elisha warns the king of Israel about the Arameans. And then the king of Aram, he thinks he's got a traitor. Because he's thinking, how else would the king of Israel know about this? And in verse 11 it says, "Now the heart of the king of Aram," talking about this, it says, "he was enraged over this thing, and he called his servant and said to them, 'Will you tell me which of us is for the king of Israel?' But in the next verse, we see how they are finding out. One of his servants said, "No, my lord, O king, but Elisha the prophet who is in Israel tells the king of Israel the words that you speak in your bedroom." So he said, "Go and see where he is, that I may send and take him." And it was told him, saying, "Behold, he is in Dothan." He sent horses and chariots and a great army there, and they came by night and surrounded the city. So the king of Aram sends an army to the city where Elisha is at. Now when the attendant of the man of God had risen early and gone out, behold, an army of horses and chariots was circling the city. And his servant said to him, "Alas, my master, what shall we do?" So he answered, "Do not fear, for those who are with us are more than those who are with them." Then Elisha prayed and said, "O Lord, I pray, open his eyes that he may see." And the Lord opened the servant's eyes, and he saw. And behold, the mountain was full of horses and chariots of fire all around Elisha. So what does Elisha do to ease this fear of his attendant? So he asked the Lord to open his eyes that he might see. And then we'll see what was stated in verse 16. But he has no reason to fear. When they came down to him, Elisha prayed to the Lord and said, "Strike this people with blindness, I pray." So he struck them with blindness according to the word of Elisha. Then Elisha said to them, "This is not the way, nor is this the city. Follow me, and I will bring you to the man whom you seek." And he brought them to Samaria. So he leads them to Samaria. When they had come into Samaria, Elisha said, "O Lord, open the eyes of these men that they may see." So the Lord opens their eyes, and they saw, and behold, they were in the midst of Samaria. So Elisha asks God to take the sight of these men, and then he leads them to Samaria. And then he asks God to open their eyes, and he does. And now as they open their eyes, they're before the king. They're in Samaria. But we want to note that the king of Israel asked Elisha what he should do. And then also note Elisha's response, his answer. We're talking about the king. In verse 21 it says, "Then the king of Israel, when he saw them, said to Elisha, 'My father, shall I kill them? Shall I kill them?' And Elisha answered, 'You shall not kill them. Would you kill those you have taken captive with your sword and with your bow? Set bread and water before them, that they may eat and drink and go to their master.'" So I put on the lesson, what does the king of Israel do for the Arameans? He prepared a great feast for them. He doesn't kill them, he prepares a feast. And then, so that's what it tells us in 23, he prepared a great feast for them, and when they had eaten and drunk, he sent them away, and they went to their master. And the marauding bands of the Arameans did not come again into the land of Israel. Now it came about after this that Ben-Hadad, the king of Aram, gathered all his army and went up and besieged Samaria. And then we'll see that there was a great famine in Samaria. Behold, they besieged it until a donkey's head was sold for 80 shekels of silver, and a fourth of a cob of dove's dung for 5 shekels of silver. So we're going to see this idea of, because of this, there's this great famine that's taking place. And it's going to go on to describe some of the things, how great a famine this is. In verse 26, I mean, because this is pretty bad, this famine. Because if you think about the point that they get to here, it says, as the king of Israel was passing by on the wall, a woman cried out to him, saying, "Help, my lord, O king." He said, "If the Lord does not help you, from where shall I help you? From the threshing floor or from the winepress?" And the king said to her, "What is the matter with you?" And she answered, "This woman said to me, 'Give your son that we may eat him today, and we will eat my son tomorrow.'" So we see what's going on here. This famine is so great that these ladies are eating their children here. And then she said that they bulled her son and ate him. And I said to her on the next day, the other woman, "Give your son that we might eat him." But she had hidden him. So just think of how great this famine is, and this what they were willing to do. Of course, it wasn't right. But when the king heard the words of the woman, he tore his clothes. Now he was passing by on the wall, and the people looked, and behold, he had sackcloth beneath his body. Then he said, May God do so to me and more also, if the head of Elisha, the son of Shaphat, remains on him today." So he's thinking this is from Elisha. Now Elisha was sitting in the house, and the elders were sitting with him, and the king sent a man from his presence. But before the messenger came to him, he said to the elders, "Do you see how this son of a murderer has sent to take away my head? Look, when the messenger comes, shut the door and hold the door shut against him. Is not the sound of the master's feet behind him?" While he was talking with them, behold, the messenger came down to him and said, "Behold, this evil is from the Lord. Why should I wait for the Lord any longer?" This, we're going to see in the following chapter, it's going to describe, we're going to start talking about this famine going away. Because chapter 7 starts talking about the famine ending. In verse 1, it says that Elijah said, "Listen to the word of the Lord. Thus says the Lord, tomorrow about this time, a measure of fine flour shall be sold for a shekel, and 2 measures of barley for a shekel in the gate of Samaria." So Elijah said that these things would take place tomorrow. Is it going to happen? According to the word of the Lord. So is it going to happen? Yes. It does. Yes. I mean, he's already proven that he's a prophet of the Lord. And then when he says he's going to do something, that it happens, because the Lord makes it happen. So tomorrow, they can get a measure of fine flour for a shekel and 2 measures of barley for a shekel. And think about it, that's in the time right when just previous to this, it was costing 5 shekels for half a quart of dove's dung, and a donkey's head was selling for 80 shekels. Because you think about the high price of it and what it was. But all of that's about to go away.
Is there a... Sorry to interrupt.
Oh, no, go ahead.
Is there a timeline when this famine lasted?
I do not know how long the famine lasted. If it gave a specific time, I didn't catch that part of it. So, anybody else? In verse 2, it says, "Then the royal officer on whose hand the king was leaning answered the man of God and said, 'Behold, if the Lord shall make windows in heaven, could this thing be? Then he said, "Behold, you shall see it with your own eyes." But he says something else. He tells him he's going to see it with his own eyes, but you shall not eat of it. So he's not going to partake of it. And we'll see why. And it also, during this time, it speaks of something else that was going on with these lepers. So these lepers are coming in right in the same time of this story. We see how they play a part in here. In verse 3, it says, "Now there were 4 leprous men in the entrance of the gate, and they said to one another, 'Why do we sit here till we die? If we say we will enter the city, then the famine is in the city, and we will die there. And if we sit here, we die also. Now therefore come, and let us go over to the camp of the Arameans. If they spare us, we will live. If they kill us, we will but die.'" So at first these leprous men are going to go to the gate of Samaria. But then they change their mind. They're going to go to the camp of the Arameans. And so, because basically, the way they're stating it, either way, you know, it's like you're not going to lose anything. Because they're going to die. But verse 5, it said, "And they arose at twilight to go to the camp of the Arameans. And when they came to the outskirts of the camp of the Arameans, behold, there was no one there." So they go down to this camp where the Arameans had been, and they don't see anyone. Who caused the Arameans to flee?
God.
God did. So he caused the Arameans to flee, and we'll see how. In verse 6 it said, "For the Lord had caused the army of the Arameans to hear a sound of chariots and a sound of horses, even the sound of a great army, so that they said to one another, 'Behold, the king of Israel has hired against us the kings of the Hittites and the kings of the Egyptians to come upon us.' Therefore, they arose and fled in the twilight, and left their tents and their horses and their donkeys, even the camp just as it was, and they fled for their life." Did you think about what was taking place here? Or consider what was taking place? Or maybe a better way of saying it is how this was taking place. We just read in chapter 6, God was using sight. He showed that he is able to even control the sight of man. He controlled the sight of these men. He blinded them. They were led in Samaria, and then their eyes were open. So he blinded them, and then he was also able to restore their sight to get the result that he wanted. And then now we get into chapter 7. He uses another sense, if you will. Now we see hearing being used. He controlled the Arameans' hearing to get the result that he wanted. Because based on what they heard or what they thought they heard, they fled. And by them fleeing, we're going to see that, you know, this is going to cure the famine. So he is all-knowing. And he also knows what the results of things will be, and this proves that.
He's also merciful. Here are some people who are running the prophet, running in God. Even though the king has got sackcloth, it amazes me. He's sackcloth, but he wasn't praying to the Lord. He's charging the Lord, and it's all his fault. Mm-hmm. You know, he's not doing anything about it. That's my paraphrase. You know, and then they go to find salvation from the Amorites, and so instead of God, again they go someplace else for aid. But the Lord had mercy on and showed them that he is going to relieve the famine just like he said he was.
Yes.
But he uses the spoil of the ones that they actually want to do.
Yes, sir. Yeah, we're going to see that that's what he uses. And, you know, he used the senses of the Arameans to make them think that they were being attacked. And that caused them to flee. And then to flee in such a manner that they left everything. So like Linda said, they're going to get this spoil, and that's going to be what ends this famine. And let's look at verse 8 of chapter 7. Verse 8. It says, when these lepers, because we're talking about the lepers and the part they're playing in all of this coming about. So when these lepers came to the outskirts of the camp, they entered one tent and ate and drank and carried from there silver and gold and clothes and went and hid them. And they returned and entered another tent and carried from there also and went and hid them. Then they said to one another, they start thinking about things. So after they've done this, they're plundering. And then they said to one another, we're not doing right. This day is a day of good news. But we're keeping silent if we wait until morning light. Punishment will take over or overtake us. Now therefore, come. Let us go and tell the king's household. This attitude. Note what's taking place. So these leopards, they go down. They see that all of these things of the Arameans are there for the taking. And it's good for them. So they start taking, they start plundering, and then I guess you could say conscience steps in. So they said, we're not doing right. We're not doing right. What was wrong with what they were doing? It goes on to say that this day is a day of good news. It's a day of good news because they had an answer to the problem that was going on. Said, this is a day of good news, but we're keeping silent. We're not doing anything about it. I can't help that when I read this, to think of Jesus. I know it's not talking about Jesus. That's not what's being spoken of here. But when I see the term good news, can we see how we could apply that, though? These men realized what they had before them. This plunder was a good news because of the famine in the land. This was going to answer that problem. It solved the problem. Yet they're hiding it, if you will. They're not letting it know. They're keeping it to themselves. What about the Lord, our Savior? He is good news because He's the answer to a dilemma. He's the only answer. Because we know that all have sinned and fall short of the glory of God. And He's the answer to this. So this just my mind going with this, when I thought of this, it's like, so what are we doing with that? Do we hide it? In that sense, are we doing right? So I just think that this serves as a good reminder so that we can teach by example and be ready to teach and ready to give an account. Any thoughts or comments? Okay. So back to the letters. In verse 10, it says, "So they came and called to the gatekeepers of the city, and they told them, saying, 'We came to the camp of the Arameans, and behold, there was no one there, nor the voice of man, only the horses tied and the donkeys tied, and the tents just as they were.' The gatekeepers called and told it within the king's household." So the king, he thinks that this is some sort of a trap. So the king arose in the night and said to his servants, "I will now tell you what the Arameans have done to us. They know that we are hungry. Therefore, they have gone from the camp to hide themselves in the field, saying, 'When they come out of the city, we will capture them alive and get into the city.' One of the servants said, 'Please, let some men take 5 of the horses which remain, which are left in the city. Behold, they will be in any case like all the multitude of Israel who are left in it. Behold, they will be in..." Well, I'm doing this twice here. "Those who have already perished. So let us send and see." So they ask of the king if someone can go check this out. You know, he thinks this is some kind of trap. Because, yes, they're starving. And the Arameans know it. So the king says, "No, they're just hiding. They're trying to lure us in. This is some sort of tactic, you know. So when they come down, they're gonna attack and be able to get into the city." But they ask of the king. They basically say, "There's no risk. We're already, you know, dying anyway. And so let us go see." So they took therefore 2 chariots with horses. And the king sent after the army of the Arameans, saying, "Go and see." They went after them to the Jordan, and behold, all the way was full of clothes and equipment, which the Arameans had thrown away in their haste. Then the messengers returned and told the king. So the people went out and plundered the camp of the Arameans. Then a measure of fine flour was sold for a shekel, and 2 measures of barley for a shekel, according to the word of the Lord. Now the king appointed the royal officer on whose hand he had leaned to have charge of the gate, but the people trampled on him at the gate, And he died just as the man of God said he would. So we see what takes place. Everything happens just as the man of God said it would, just as Elisha had said. And then again, it said it happened just as the man of God, this is verse 18, had spoken to the king, saying, 2 measures of barley for a shekel and a measure of fine flour for a shekel will be sold tomorrow about this time at the gate. Then the royal officer answered the man of God and said, now behold, if the Lord should make windows in heaven, and this is one of the statements it said earlier, could such a thing be? And he said, behold, you will see it with your own eyes, but you will not eat of it. So this is what we mentioned earlier. He's going to see this, but he's not going to partake of it. And I put on the lesson, the end of the chapter explains why this royal officer is unable to eat of it. And what happens? Okay, yeah, he dies. It's because he was trampled at the gate by the people. We see that in verse 20. So he is not going to partake of it, but he sees it coming about. And I think I have just 1 or 2 minutes. So are there any questions or thoughts or comments? Man, y'all quiet this morning. Well, if there's nothing else, then let's go ahead and let's stop here. And then in our next class, we'll pick up in chapter 8 so we can start off with a fresh chapter. And I appreciate everyone's attention.